Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jonah Carey writes for The Athletic. He works for Sportsnet. He has the Opener podcast, and he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hey, Jonah, happy Friday.
Hey, same to you guys.
So, Jonah, Lucas Giolito is finally doing that thing that all three of us wanted him to do from many, many moons ago. That's a hell of an outing against one of baseball's best, if not the best team in the game. What's different for him? How fun is that to watch for you, knowing that you called it a little bit?
Well, first of all, I will say, and I know that people don't like hearing about other people's fantasy teams, but I have Giolito on my three-sport crazy League of Leagues team, and I benched him at Houston. Shame, shame on me for not trusting Lucas Giolito and his changeup of death. He has been fantastic, getting better all the time. And, you know, it's really a tribute to patience. This is how it goes with prospects. Sometimes you have somebody fully formed like a Juan Soto or Ronald Acuna, but very oftentimes Brandon Phillips or 10,000 other guys who come up and struggled and come back up. You just get that situation where somebody comes up and it takes time and they have to work it out. With pitching, it's even more complicated. Giolito has a fastball, curve, and changeup, and he's got to figure out the right combination. The curve wasn't as effective for him. Going to the changeup more often, spotting the fastball effectively. It's really great to see. Not for nothing, by the way, but other than that start against Boston a little while back, Ronaldo Lopez has been good to great in, what, six out of his last seven now, too. So we're seeing really signs of positivity here for the White Sox from that rotation. I got a question in a recent chat. Oh, what about all these injuries that they have? Kopech and some other guys going through surgery. And my response to that is, look at the bright side. The two guys that they've been hoping for who are currently at the major league level, meaning not Dylan Cease, are doing things. It's really, really nice to see. I'm a booster of both of those guys, and I love that they're pitching well.
It's such a huge story, what is happening with engineering of pitching and pitchers. And it's not just with the cameras and the coaches and what teams now call pitching infrastructure. You wrote about pitchers adopting the cutter. And it comes at the same time that Travis Sochik wrote a piece for 538, I'm sure you saw, about how filthy sliders and curves are getting because they're working at it. When Lucas Giolito says, I'm going to work on it, it's a real thing now. They're actually doing it. What are the overall ramifications? What are the implications of the fact that we now know that at this high level, pitching and pitchers can be engineered?
So beyond Travis's article, which is really good, I'm reading a book called The MVP Machine by Travis and Ben Lindbergh. It's phenomenal. You guys, it's right up your alley. You'd appreciate it. And I'm going to have them on my podcast next week as well. And the gist of it is, if you can engineer pitching, you can engineer almost anything. And it used to be, they quoted Billy Martin in the book, and it was something to the effect of, you can't turn a mule into a racehorse. Maybe you can. You know, maybe if you have a certain amount of talent and you just have grit and you just work at it and try to perfect it, you can get better. You know, we're seeing places like driveline baseball where kids go there and they're throwing 86 and they come out of it throwing 91. And even major leaguers are starting to use that stuff. And, you know, you start coming out of it throwing 91, and you come in 91 and maybe come out at 94 and you've got a wicked hammer. So there are ways to engineer things. There are ways to do it. It's whether it's throwing weighted balls, which is the simplest exercise ever, although pitchers didn't use it until very recently, to long toss, to, you know, really just working on tunneling and to figuring out angles and planes and what have you. And it's the same with hitters, by the way. The whole launch angle generation, it's not like Justin Turner was a really good baseball player before. Josh Donaldson was a busted catching prospect. These guys made themselves. And yes, they're world-class athletes. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, Trevor Bauer is discussed in this book. And Trevor Bauer says, I'm not a world-class athlete. I'm just a guy. And I worked and I worked and I worked from the time that I was a little kid to make myself into what I am today. And he still uses those techniques today. The whole thing where he got injured using his drone and people ridiculed him during the postseason, he was using his drone because it was part of his whole repertoire, because he's into drones, he's into technology, he's into science, he's into measuring everything. And you might not like Bauer's personality, I'm not nuts about it either, but the bottom line is that he gets things done by being gritty, by working hard. And so those old truisms that, oh, well, you know, if you work hard, you can outwork the other guy. I rolled my eyes at it, too. But more and more, we're seeing evidence of pitchers and position players who just find ways to make themselves better by virtue of just bearing down, using the technology available, and getting better.
So two things here. One, we have a working theory on the show, Jonah, that if you say driveline on the broadcast, someone over there has heard it, they have to fist bump, and then they shotgun a Red Bull down. So just so you know, that's that. Those are the kind of ramifications. And secondly, what do we know about how teams, about how much teams think they can add by this, we're calling it engineering? Is it 2 miles an hour to a fastball? Is it five? Is it eight? Like, at what point does the curve between natural talent and work kind of obliterate what we've known about how we look at baseball players and who we're looking for?
Yeah, I think that there's something to that. I think that we need to reevaluate everything. You know, that you're going to get five tool players, and maybe they have an advantage. Like, maybe if you take Byron Buxton and you take somebody who is 2 degrees less talented than Byron Buxton and you put them through the same regimen, Buxton's going to emerge as the better player just because he's so toolsy, he's so talented, and that's fine. But I do think there's something to be said for, you know, breaking down paradigms and thinking differently. It really is the case that you can engineer all kinds of players. And this is the thing about, I'm touting somebody else's book on your show, but the thing about the MVP machine, and Verducci's written about this, and Ken Rosenthal wrote a great piece about the Astros and the way that they go about pitching and how even somebody like Justin Verlander can get better, it's that you find ways, you know, you push things forward. And we were always looking, when we were writing about baseball, people like me and people who are analytical, we were always looking at kind of stories and things that are descriptive, you know, that, okay, well, here's the Oakland Athletics and here's what they're doing. And really what we need to be looking at were things that were prescriptive, meaning player development. Player development was kind of the uncharted territory where we could say, well, you know, the Oakland A's did a really good job of identifying Moneyball type hitters, or, you know, this team did a good job of identifying pitchers, but we need to get into the nuts and bolts, the hows and whys, which previously were the domain of teams. Teams could do this, and now we're seeing more in the public discourse, especially with, you know, really good writers who are out there, like Sochik, like Rosenthal, like Verducci, talking about this stuff, that we can get to a place where we can say, all right, we now understand how it is that Josh Donaldson became who he was, or Giolito became who he was. It's not just that they were talented. Here is the very specific path that they took to get to stardom.
That's fascinating, mm-hmm. and it links together several topics of discussion today. We had Len Casper sitting with us just a little bit ago, and here are the Cubs in the era of velocity, and they don't have it. And they've got some of the smartest people in baseball, but because of how they've decided to construct their team, how they've decided to draft, they've got a very old-fashioned starting rotation with old-fashioned starting pitchers, and they've got a matchup-based sort of guile relief corps that isn't blowing people away. So I wonder, as you discuss these things, it's chicken and the egg, right? When you talk about prescriptive versus descriptive, are teams responding to the engineering, or are they engineering and then hoping everybody else just figures them out? I guess I'm wondering where it starts and how you decide to engineer. Is it completely new, or do you say, look, this is best practices and this is what's being done to win now?
Both, and we'll deal with the Cubs specifically here. The Cubs, don't forget, are a product of some of the things that they did a few years ago, right? So John Lester was signed at a time when, you know, maybe we didn't have edutronic stuff and we didn't have TrackMan churning at the same degree, and we just weren't as far along with player development as we are now. It was only a few years ago, but things have really changed a lot in the last few years. I mean, I'm learning on the fly every day, and I can only imagine how much teams are trying to learn. So I think there's something there. Same thing with Jason Hayward. They signed Jason Hayward at a time when, you know, baseball believed that evaluating defense, and you could find a lot, and maybe this guy saves 30 runs a season. 30 runs is worth 3 wins. Therefore, if Jason Hayward's an okay hitter, he's a superstar. And they did things based on those parameters. And, you know, we can get better than that now. Now we would not necessarily, maybe we'd throw that money at John Lester, maybe we wouldn't. Maybe we just look for a velocity guy and then try to pair his velocity with an okay curveball and make the curveball into a monster curveball. You know, the way that Verlander and Cole have become not only good pitchers with Houston, but just absolute world beaters, Cy Young tech caliber pitchers. So I wonder if there's a little bit to all of it, but that we still have to grandfather out some of the players from the previous generation, the Lesters and the Haywards. It's not to say they're bad players, by the way. They both have their value. Lester in particular has been pretty darn good this season. It's just that, you know, we're not, you can't start, it's not like anybody's starting from scratch. It's not like there's an expansion team doing this stuff. It's that teams that have players on the roster from the previous generation of evaluation are now entering into the system of modern player development, and here's how we think we can do better, not just with our 19-year-old rookie, but you know what, our 35-year-old left-hander, we think we can make him better too.
Jonah, there's a big story going around baseball that has flown somewhat under the radar just because of the nature of it. We talked about it a few days ago. It's Carter Stewart and his eschewing the Braves for a 6-year, $7 million deal with the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks. That is a Japanese team. He's got the deal, and he could be a free agent at 25 if things go well for him. He wants to get back in Major League Baseball. I wonder what you think this means for that kind of talent, that kind of amateur to professional talent going forward.
Yeah, so I should plug my chat every week at The Athletic. It's Thursdays at noon at theathletic.com or just on The Athletic app. And somebody asked me about this. And the guy that I remember, just because I follow multiple sports and whatever, is Brandon Jennings. If you recall, and I'm pretty sure it's Brandon Jennings. I'm assuming I'm not getting this wrong. But Brandon Jennings was a basketball player, pretty good one. And he ended up, I believe, if I'm not getting this wrong, going to China. And he played in China, and he bypassed the NCAA system, the NCAA factory, where you don't get paid and you're at the risk of getting injured and there's no compensation and what have you. And he made money in the meantime, and he played against pros, and then he went to the NBA. Now, Brandon Jennings didn't become a superstar, but he became a useful player in the league, and he didn't have to go through this apprenticeship where you have to go to Duke or Kentucky or whatever. So this could be that, you know, but it's not like Jennings. There were articles at the time that said, well, this is the end of college basketball, or at least this is going to be a big change, and this is going to be a game changer. Maybe. I don't know. Now, the thing about baseball is, in some ways, although you do get paid in minor league baseball, and you don't, at least over the table, get paid in college basketball, it's nothing, right? I mean, we've talked about minor league wages and how they're brutal and how the conditions are rough and you're on these long bus rides and whatever. So skipping that could have a lot of value. But I remain skeptical because there's just so much institutional value to those minor league systems that it's going to take players who are, you know, courageous to some extent to want to do stuff like this, to want to go overseas to play somewhere else. It's not like there's a parallel baseball league in North America that I know of where you can make, I don't know, $1 million a year and make a good living while you're 19 and then play until you're 25 and then go over. The deal with the antitrust exemption, the monopoly that Major League Baseball has, is that it prohibits stuff like that. So I still wonder if there's going to be some risk of whatever it is, culture shock or homesickness or whatever, that prevents this. Now, having said that, at least having the option is great. And if the only thing that comes out of this is not so much that the Fukuoka Hawks get better, but that minor league baseball changes its system, that would be great. I had Garrett Brocious on my podcast not long ago. He's an attorney. He's been fighting the fight for minor leaguers for the last 5 years or so. They make less than minimum wage. They're living below the poverty line, 6 to a 2-bedroom apartment. It's brutal, man. And don't tell me that just because you play baseball for a living or attempt to play baseball for a living that you need to sacrifice. That's not fair. If you were whatever it is, if you were a sanitary engineer, if you were a janitor, if you were a dentist, if you were a lawyer, if you were anything, you should not be expected to work for basically nothing. Same goes for minor league ball players. So if this does nothing, Carter Stewart and maybe others like Carter Stewart, then other than change the conditions of minor league baseball, it is a monumental win for not only minor leaguers, but for human beings, period.
We should let the record reflect that Brandon Jennings indeed played professionally in Italy.
Gotcha.
It's understandable because those countries are linked by, of course, the voyages of Marco Polo, who legendarily discovered pasta in China and then brought it back to where it became more famous in Italy.
That's what I was thinking.
Right, I know. There's that, just kind of at the top of your head.
Same thing I had.
I thought it was really cool in your article about the cutter. The best part of this and what makes baseball so wonderful is how you connected current usage of the cutter to none other than Sandy Koufax.
Yeah.
How did that work?
Well, and it was Rick Honeycutt who turned me on to that. Rick Honeycutt, the pitching coach for the Dodgers, who's one of the most underrated pitching coaches in the league. He's been around forever. And he talked about it. He said that Koufax is always around. Imagine this, that you're just playing for the Dodgers and just Koufax is walking around. But he's there. He's there in spring training. He's there on the margins, and he'll come over. If you want something, you can ask him. If you're a pitcher, just say, hey, can I work on this with you? He'll usually say yes. And so if you talk to Koufax about it, what he'll say is that later in his career, what he did was he didn't throw a new pitch called a cutter exactly. He just tried to throw a fastball, and he changed his grip a little bit, and it started cutting. And I'm thinking to myself, the end of Koufax's career was 1966. In 66, he was in his prime. That 61 to 66 era, he was ridiculous. So imagine that he's throwing that absolute heat with that ridiculous curveball, and now all of a sudden he's going to Mariano Rivera you too. That's just stupid. I cannot imagine being a hitter in the 60s and facing Sandy Koufax, and he's got all that stuff, and now he's figured out cut too. Because it wasn't something that was really done all that much at all before the 60s. If you go back in history, at least anecdotally, that seems to be a kind of a pioneering sort of thing. Maybe he was the first guy to throw a cutter, or at least the first star to throw something resembling a cutter. So just remarkable the way that Koufax was able to really pioneer so many things, and that included, he was, of course, one of a kind.
Jonah, Wilson Contreras has been one of the best hitters in the National League. He has meant a whole ton for this Cubs lineup. I have this worry, and I've had it for a while, I don't know what happened to me, but I have this worry about offenses that lean on catchers specifically because of the workload that's attached to them.
Yep.
Do you, in talking with teams and talking with, you know, the guys that you talk with on a daily basis, is there an overarching worry about that still, or have we gotten to a point where that workload doesn't cost as much on a guy?
I wonder if it's recency bias, because catchers recently have been brutal at hitting, really bad. You know, Buster Posey was supposed to be the leader of the breed, and he just doesn't hit anymore. And you just have a lot of guys, you know, who are responsible for pitch framing and what have you, and offense is not necessarily emphasized all that much. So there aren't that many great hitters. Where's Carlton Fisk? Where's Gary Carter? Where are all these guys? Granted, those are Hall of Famers, but you just don't see as much right now, right in the here and now, as you would. So Contreras stands out because, you know, although he had a rough season last year, he's back to hitting this year, and maybe, you know, he breaks the mold that we say in general it's not a good idea to build an offense around, you know, catchers, but that Contreras could be different. Contreras is in pretty good shape. He's young. You know, he hasn't been, it's not like he has 2,000 games of catching under his belt. Maybe you can get away with it with him. Having said that, if I had a catcher who could catch 50 games and do an effective job of it, that would make me happy, because if I'm the Cubs, I have playoff aspirations. And as much as it's nice that Wilson Contreras is hitting in July and August, I want him hitting in October too. That's the real risk, maybe, is that if you're talking about building an offense around a catcher, what you're saying is what's going to happen in the World Series when this guy's spent. That's what I don't want to happen, and that's why if the Cubs can find themselves good backup catchers during Wilson Contreras' career, it'll help their cause.
My mind is just racing as to why we don't have these catchers that we used to have, why there's no Johnny Bench. And I'm wondering if it has to do with something in the developmental process. Now, Contreras, you know, Victor Caratini were both non-catchers who were turned into catchers. You know, how many kids, like, come out of college, like, I am a catcher, I catch, this is what I do, this is what I shall do, and they just, it's the essence of who they are, when now baseball is looking at athletes as more fungible and versatile than ever. Is the dearth of great catching part of flexibility and part of versatility? Does it have to do something with, I always look back, how does it connect to increased velocity of pitching? And I would love to know why this is happening.
You know what? I think the versatility, I'm actually going to take the other stance and say, I wonder if it has to do with the same phenomenon that makes pitchers really lousy hitters, like worse than ever before, because they are. There were pitchers that could hit in the past. Now you've got Bumgarner and Greinke, and that's about it. And it has to do with specializing, that you don't have necessarily all-around athletes. For, you know, forget about different skills in baseball. You don't have Dave Winfield types or Tony Gwynn types play multiple sports at a high level anymore. That's just not done. Everybody puts stuff away, and you get into perfect game, and you get into tournaments, and you get into leagues, and you are determined to just refine your craft. So if you're a pitcher, you're going to pitch, and pitch some more, and maybe you'll have TJ at 16, but so what? Because now you can throw a 98 with a yakker, and that's totally fine. And if you're a catcher, maybe it goes that way too, that you are going to work on catching. It's not glamorous, but for the few who take on that task, they're going to devote themselves to it. They're going to learn pitch framing in a way that, you know, has never been done to this extent ever before, such that when they get to college or when they get to high levels of high school and they're ready to be drafted, this guy is Austin Hedges. He is a savant behind the plate, and he's so, so good defensively that we're going to draft him, never mind the fact that he hits 217 every year, and that's the end of that. So I think it might be that. I think it's just that it is so hard. It's so much harder to make it in today's game than it was you know, a few decades ago. The players are just better now, that you need to get really, really good at one thing, and maybe you just don't have time to get really, really good at a bunch of things. And the guys who are good at a bunch of things make $35 million a year.
Joan, appreciate it. Great chatting with you as always. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too, fellas.
That is Jonah Carey, who joins us every Friday to talk pretty high-level baseball stuff.
Good chat with Jonah today.
Look, man, between Joe Sheehan and Jonah Carey, I defy you to find a sports radio show that brings you that kind of baseball intelligence.
We're going to have to get our hands on that book, the Ben Lindbergh book, the MVP machine. For those of you out there who are into this kind of into baseball the way we are and Jonah is, that one sounds like a pretty damned important book.
The segment brought to you by Anthony Buick GMC in Gurnee. Get amazing savings during GMC Truck Month. Save 19% on a new 19 GMC Acadia. Save 22% on a new 19 Buick Encore. Anthony Buick GMC in Gurnee. For offer details, visit AnthonyGurnee.com. Bernstein and McKnight, it's full already. Didn't take long. Is your guy here? Is the guy who thinks you suck?
He's not. No, I don't see him. I don't think he's here yet.
Yeah, the guy who walks up to you goes, yeah, I don't like you. You suck.
And he's been banned from multiple places.
I don't like you. Sure. My friend doesn't like you
death
either.
Death sentence on 17th.
You'll be dead. At Smoke Daddy is the place to be. All their meats are smoked in-house over hard fruit woods, paired with homemade barbecue sauces. By the way, get the key lime pie.
Yeah, it's tasty.
It's a thing.
Balanced is what it is.
The key lime pie is a thing. And I took one bite of it and I said, you know, it's not quite tart enough for me. I could use a little bit more lemon juice. And then I waited a second and I got the lime zest that came through on the end. And I said, This one was laying in wait for me.
The finisher is the graham cracker crust with the walnuts.
I mentioned the piece by Travis Sawchik about what's happening with curves and sliders and just how nasty pitches are getting. Looking at the graphs and how quickly this is happening in just a year, if you think that breaking stuff is filthier than ever, if it just looks that way to you, you're absolutely right. It just is.
I think this may get us to a really good baseball list just to start our weekend as well.
Cool.
So you don't want to go anywhere. It's Bernstein and McKnight live at Smoke Daddy across the way from Wrigley Field. Lawrence Holmes up in a little while. Zach Zabin has the pregame show for the Cubs and Reds. That's this afternoon here on 670 The Score.
We got a chance for you to win $1,000 in cash with a lucky text keyword in just a bit. You got to be listening for that opportunity. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves are battling the San Diego Gulls in the Western Conference Finals. The Wolves return home Monday and Wednesday for Games 6 and 7 at Allstate Arena. Tickets start at $15. For playoff information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Bernstein and McKnight here at Smoke Daddy, right across from Gallagher Way, across from Wrigley Field, getting you ready for the Cubs and the Reds. It's DeSclafani against Hendricks.
That's right.
And that will start your three-day Memorial Day weekend. Now, we mentioned with Jonah Carey that there's more data that is showing us exactly what we're seeing in Major League Baseball right now, and what hitters are seeing is absolute nastiness.
It's like the Crash Davis speech on the bus when he tells the guys that he was once in the show. They have ungodly breaking stuff in the show, sliders that explode. I mean, this is what we're seeing.
This from 538's Travis Sawchik. MLB is on an unstoppable pathway to more and more strikeouts. So we knew that there were a record number of strikeouts last year, highest strikeout percentage. We are on pace for the 12th straight year of a record set for strikeout rate.
Sure.
And he's citing velocity. However, there's another culprit. Breaking balls have never moved more. According to a 538 analysis of pitch effects and StatCast data at Baseball Prospectus, sliders and curveballs are darting away from bats at their greatest levels in the pitch tracking area, and breaking balls are being thrown more frequently. So they are tracking horizontal break. They are tracking vertical break. And it's not just a little bit more. It's a lot more. It says velocity is at play because velocity leads to an increase in spin rate. Average curveball spin rate is up. And transverse spin creates what they call the Magnus effect, and you've seen this before. You know all about this stuff because you're a pitching savant. But velocity hasn't risen as dramatically as pitch movement has. And it isn't just that fresh faces with killer breaking balls are replacing older, craftier pitchers. It's guys who are already throwing curveballs who are throwing better curveballs. This is engineering. This is what's going on. 86 pitchers who threw at least 50 curves in 2017 and 2019 averaged an increase of 1.4 inches of greater vertical break.
That's a lot.
So new methods in training, new technologies. They mention Trevor Bauer. They mention driveline.
Fist high bump, five. Red Bull crush. Okay.
And they have video here talking about a guy named Matt Boyd. Matt Boyd designed a slider at driveline. That's literally the words they use. Detroit Tiger starter Matt Boyd, who designed a slider at driveline, has become one of the top pitchers in baseball. He says, I worked on it at driveline a ton. We were on the Rapsodo and on the Edgertronic a lot. We're working that thing, working that thing. There's also a facility called Dynamic Velocity in Omaha, where White Sox lefty Aaron Bummer designed a pitch. Bummer's allowed only one earned run in his first 11 and a third innings. His cutter and fastball rank among the best in the game. This is after righties hit .338 against him.
Yeah, he got crushed.
And what Bummer said was, it's actual proof that your ball's moving. It's not someone sitting behind you and saying, oh, yeah, that's a great pitch. That looks good. You have instant feedback that tells you, did that pitch do what it's supposed to do? How about that?
It's impressive is what it is. Let me give you, as a companion piece to this, and you tell me if you see the connection between the two of them. It's a difficult list to pin down, but I'm giving you a list of 10 from bottom to top. And you tell me what you think this list is. From 10 to 1, Masahiro Tanaka, Blake Snell, Lance Lynn, Domingo Herman, Lucas Giolito, Garrett Cole, Tyler Glasnow, Mike Minor, Frankie Montas, Matthew Boyd.
Antoine Fats Domino.
Okay.
Barkish.
I'm trying to figure out a commonality here. They're all good. Does it have to do with the quality of a certain pitch?
It doesn't. That is very simply. Think about the names I just gave you. Those names, some of them you've heard, some you've never heard of. Some you're like, Frankie Montas, wasn't he a White Sox farmhand for a second? Yes, he was. That is from 10 to 1, Fangraphs WAR for American League pitchers.
You're kidding.
Those are the guys that are performing as good as anybody
Lance
in the American
Lynn?
League right now. Matthew Boyd, Frankie Montas, Mike Minor, Tyler Glasnow's been out for a couple of weeks now. Cole, Giolito, Herman, Snell, Tanaka. You go down the list. You
those are the like best pitchers in the league.
10 best, according to Fangraphs WAR. So I don't know whether it's, I mean,
what does that tell you?
It tells me that you can engineer anything now. It tells me that the conversation we had with Jonah Carey is about to, if not break, then completely change pitching. And it tells me this, Dan, you know, we're a couple of weeks from the Atlantic League putting in the robotic umpires. And then in the second half of that season, they moved the mound back to 95 feet, whatever the hell they're moving it back to. I am more convinced than ever, reading this, talking about how these pitchers are moving, talking about how these pitchers are dominating the process of creating new pitches, they're going to end up moving the mound back in Major League Baseball.
Yeah,
it's going to happen.
I went to a different place as we're talking about all this, and it also goes back to what we were talking to Brandon Kinstler about Tommy Hotovy and his relationship with him, what the Cubs said about why they hired Tommy Hotovy. When Aaron Bummer says what he says, it's not just some guy sitting behind you and saying that looks good.
Right.
It's actual objective data. It is amazing, amazing how long Don Cooper has survived. You talk about a dinosaur, and I'm not even criticizing. I'm not saying he's bad at his job.
He's not.
I'm saying that he probably still has value, and I don't know if the Sox have done this quietly, but when do you move Don Cooper into an emeritus position where he can lend his wisdom and be available and still do what he does while you are still creating a pitching infrastructure that is up to speed?
Well, I think some of that works independently, though, Dan. Like, if you're going to go and engineer pitches and grips and whatnot,
on your own, yeah,
all that stuff can be done in the offseason. And I would tell you that, at least in a couple of conversations I had with Coop, while he comes off as very old school, he understands that there has been a lot changed in this game and that you're looking for different things right now. He might not use... He's one of the guys a little bit like Lester is. He may not use the same terminology
but
as
he gets it.
Spin rates or, you know, all that kind of stuff. But he does kind of, or at least seem to me, you know, this was two, three years ago, but seemed to me to understand that these are the things you're looking for. And I can tell you that they have surrounded that that pitching infrastructure or injected that pitching infrastructure with plenty of modern-day understanding.
Right, they have people that speak the language.
Absolutely okay. True, yeah.
I'm just curious about
whether it's from the AAA level all the way to the roaming pitching instructors. Like, They understand that.
Yeah, don't take it the wrong way, because when you hear Jonah talk about Rick Honeycutt and talk about hell having Sandy Koufax around and just the stuff
Rick Honeycutt is ancient.
Yeah, the stuff you want to hear from those guys. I'm hopeful for the White Sox, especially at a critical juncture with some of these young arms, that maybe it's becoming more like hitting, in that guys are more their own pitching coaches than they used to be.
Maybe. I still wouldn't, because of the nature of the game or that job, I still think having a guy that understands kind of like a top-down sort of infrastructure where you do have that guru, I guess, that you can go to, that matters, and it matters in so much as you can have Tommy Hotovy look at you and go, you know, when we threw on that soccer field during, you know, winter or whatever it was, here are the things you were doing. Like, that kind of connection and that kind of proof still seems to matter, because for every Brandon Kinsler who tells you, or rather for every Aaron Bummer that says, here's proof, here's what it looks like, you don't have to have that guy telling you this looks good, there is a Brandon Kinsler or a Lester, somebody that needs the intermediary to get from one to the other, whether that's because he's stubborn or doesn't want to or doesn't get it. It doesn't matter. You have to have that guy who's able to do it.
And the psychologist. I mean, I understand too that there's the psychological aspect of it. You know, as Theo's talked about, that you can't. No matter how much we measure, there is still an endless amount that we cannot.
Yeah.
And it is if a pitcher in the offseason is simply going to say, "This is my slider now," or "This is my perfected cutter, this is the new spin rate, this is the new release point," it still can be up to the pitching coach as far as the initiation of the action, of the sequencing, of the whatever your slide, go ahead, whatever your spin rate is, whatever you're doing with it, however it comes out of your hand, it's my job to help make sure we're arranging everything you have in your disposal to best get guys out.
Obviously, there are disconnects. Like, do you figure that the Cubs, if they had a take back on the whole Carl Edwards Jr. new delivery thing that he implemented in the offseason, season on his own when he brought in his spring training, if they could go back and do that over again, they would probably do it a little differently, right? I mean, that's not a process
yes.
you want to have to
yes,
relive.
They would.
I think they'd take that back.
This segment is sponsored by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or at drinkhint.com. Hint, mouth-watering water. How'd you like to win $1,000?
I would love that.
You're not eligible.
Oh, well, why would you do that to me?
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to you, the Bernstein & McKnight listener, who might want, in the next 3 days, an extra $1,000 in the pocket. Well, you might just win with the lucky text keyword. It's a word close to my heart. I will tell you what it is next on The Score.
You're done. You're absolutely done for the week.
For the long weekend, in fact, which many have gotten started early here at Smoke Daddy, Lawrence Holmes is going to have a brief period of time before Cubs baseball today. Hello, Lawrence.
Hello, men. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful.
Oh, I'm fat.
Not as good as our friends here at the corner of the bar. I think they're 3 or 4 in. Good start, fellas.
Yeah.
Way to go. Get after this weekend.
This is how you get it done right there.
Smoke Daddy's the place to start.
The problem, what Smoke Daddy always does to me on these Fridays is generally when the show is over, I go immediately to the gym and I get on the scale and I work out and then I get on the scale again and
163 and a half.
I can't leave until I am, and I'm really dreading getting on the scale right now. So
see, my tradition with the Smoke Daddy show is you go, you have whatever they make for you, you eat a lot of it, and then by the time you wake up in like the fourth inning, whatever game it is,
you
just like, that was a good day.
Well, your
really
car is in the ditch, but you have to make sure you're home first.
Yeah, usually I get there.
Well, considering that they have, like, the up here, we're upstairs at Smoke Daddy. If people were, like, if they're downstairs looking for us, we're upstairs. The view of the big screen, this is prime real estate.
Isn't it?
Because you've got the great food, you're inside, and if you want, you can go outside. And you got Gallagher Way and the game right here. Like, this is if you want to do Wrigley without going into the park. This is where you should probably do it.
It's the amusement park aspect of it, right? This is what they wanted.
Do they carry the game live on that TV during the game?
Yeah,
they do.
That's my point.
So people can come out.
My point is, you come here, you eat ribs until you pass out.
Oh, so many ribs.
And then the game is on. It's a beautiful setup, especially upstairs. Like, that is. And then you can do, like, you don't have to worry about, like, maybe the seats are a little, like, maybe you're a little too large and the seats in Wrigley a little too small. And you're like, no, I'll just sit here at the bar and be like, yes, more ribs. And and more meats. Bring me all of the meats.
They have it. This is get a case of the meat sweats if you.
I got a little bit of that going.
If you're liking that, absolutely. So we super baseball-y today off the Lucas Giolito performance that was. If the five inning complete game didn't open your eyes, you had to pay attention to that last night. That was a guy announcing himself.
He's been moving towards this for the last few weeks and has gotten command of that change. Last night it was the slider, though.
Change was good, though.
Change was good. But last night he was getting people out with the slider. And look, Altuve's not there. Springer's not in that lineup. But that lineup's still damn good, without those guys in it. And when you have to go all the way back to 2016 for your last complete game shutout, it's not like complete games are like a thing in Major League Baseball these days.
No,
unless they're five inning.
Going seven innings isn't a thing.
Yeah, that's about it. Are you like me though, Lawrence? With Lucas's starts, especially the good ones, he'll go almost immediately to talking about how he and James McCann were working hitters in the game plan that they were going. I've never heard a guy speak as highly and consistently about a catcher after just a couple of starts that had gotten himself fixed. I killed the James McCann signing. I killed him. I didn't think he was a good player. I didn't think he was a good hitter. I didn't think his reputation as a catcher had fixed itself. He's fixed himself, and the communication he seems to have with that staff is tremendous.
May I make a suggestion to you?
Please.
Because I know that you will walk over there to the south side. Go have a conversation with him.
Yeah.
In the clubhouse.
Good chat.
Yes.
Should I start with apologizing?
No, I don't think that you need to apologize, because I think there were a lot of people who felt the same way that you did. He's sharp, and he gets it. He gets it. And just talking to him in some of the stuff that he did to prepare to catch these guys, it's clear that he wasn't just trying to catch on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's more than that he takes seriously his role as a receiver. And quite honestly, and I joked with him about the concept of being a catcher having to be a little bit psychologist.
Hell yeah.
And working guys through. And he was explaining to me how sometimes when Giolito or Lopez don't have their good stuff, that they have to scrap the game plan and start over.
That was two games ago when early on whatever he was piggybacking,
slider was gone,
wasn't working.
Man.
And next thing you know, he got through that and settled down and found something that was. That's pitching.
It's pitching and it's catching. It's the catcher realizing, yo, fam, like you don't. That pitch you don't have command of today,
so we
got to throw it away. Like we can't be out here with you throwing a terrible slider that doesn't do what it's supposed to do, or not the parachute change that Giolito throws, which he means to leave up in the area, but the one that you're not trying to and it gets pounded, you've got to make corrections on the fly. I don't think that the offensive production from him is going to last, and I think you'd be foolish to think that it is. But I do think that he might be one of those guys that along the way in a rebuild, you go, maybe he's part of this thing because he's only, what, 28?
Yeah, 28, 29. I think he turns 29 this season. But the lessons learned are huge, too. Like, if Lucas or whomever, Ronaldo, anybody who's working with him, has now kind of, like, taken that lesson and encapsulated it so that they can teach it back to the next catcher, whether that's Zach Collins, Sebi Zavala, whoever it is that they bring in, now you've got like the know-how that's kind of institutionalized, even if the guy, James McCann, is just kind of a passing dude in this rebuild.
Well, I'm wondering if he is that. And we'll see. I mean, we still got a lot of season to go. But I know that I'm encouraged. I mean, you guys heard me yesterday.
Yeah.
I was sitting at home. I was just sitting there just smiling, just watching that game, because now I know at least I've got a night. We'll see what happens, but I've got a night that I'm excited about with them going up against the first place team.
Yep.
Because you have one of the other good pitcher on your team going against a guy in Berríos who struggled over his last couple of starts.
Yeah, he's still nasty though.
He is still nasty, but there are other things to keep in mind. For example, they got in this morning from Anaheim at 5 a.m. Can you take advantage of a tired team that did hit the absolute snot out of the ball last night?
Did you see? They are on record, the Twins, to obliterate the single-season home run record set by the Yankees just a couple of years ago. By 120 homers.
I ran across this stat on the Twins. So the Twins had 8 home runs last night.
How many games did they play against Baltimore?
Oh, well, they people love Baltimore. Yeah. They love crushing. But here's the best part. In franchise history, In 55 years of Twins baseball, they had no 8 home run games. So far this season, they've had 2 8 home run games. And strangely enough, both of the 8 home run games came in makeups of rainouts.
Huh.
Yeah, but the ball is within limits, right? The ball's completely range of coefficients. Everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
Their run differential is ridiculous.
Is it 90 still?
It's 90.
Get to 90? Yeah.
To put that in perspective, the White Sox is minus 39.
I was looking at that, and I was keeping in mind as I was watching Lucas last night and again this morning, your whole, that's just enough to bring, just when I think I'm out, they bring me back in again. Like, of course it's a split with the Astros. Like, of course it's like just enough to keep you around. And I was digging into that 35 or 39 minus that they were, the run differential wise. If you find the places, it's like it's 6 blowouts. And the pitchers in 3 of those blowouts aren't guys that really matter. And then the other one is just a massive letdown by Ronaldo Lopez early on in the season. It's like, okay, I can get around this.
They need 1.5 starters. That's I'm telling you.
And a call up.
A
call up.
To me, the half starter is the call up.
I need the and. I want the and.
I'm telling you, considering where the American League is right now,
it's so bad.
Aren't the White Sox 3 games out of a wild card?
3.5. Yeah, I looked this morning.
Here you go. You're doing a texter, Lawrence. Do not try to get me excited about the White Sox.
I'm sorry. I'm excited about it.
I will say, it's real. You're not teasing people. You're not leading people on. You wouldn't do this if part of you wasn't really feeling it.
No.
Yeah.
No. I don't think that they're good, but they might be good enough this year. And things are definitely moving in a much better direction. And I think a little faster than all of us anticipated.
Yeah, despite the injuries, or when you take into account the injuries, yes, I would say the pace is acceptable.
Let them win tonight. I'm going to be on Twitter acting a fool. Let them win tonight. It's going to be glorious. Gentlemen, thank you. That is Bernstein and McKnight. Look at your hand taken care of.
Yeah,
get it x-rayed.
Get an x-ray.
Crazy softballer.
I got to not do that anymore. It's very stupid.
It's very bad. Stupid. It's bad.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.